How was your Halloween?
It was. I was at work, so it was.
But when you did something for Halloween.
Well, yeah, we went to the Renaissance Fair. And that was a good time.
Good.
I ate a giant pickle. I had a beer. I didn't eat a lot that day, which is like such a shame because I love all the food there.
Yeah.
But it was like 80 degrees out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't it super hot? Yeah, I wouldn't want to eat that either.
And I was like, everything here sounds delicious. It was like, here's a bread bowl with fucking soup in it. No, thank you. It is 80 fucking degrees.
And I mean, and I get like, that's October. So I could kind of understand like having soup and like warmer things because that seems like it would make sense. The Ren Fair where I am is in May, and they also have soup.
No, this is year round. Like, they have the soup year round.
Okay. But yeah, the Renaissance Fair we have is in May, like, specifically. And then they have, like, they do a thing in October, and then they do a thing in December. Like, they do, like, a light show thing in December, and then they do, like, a haunted attraction thing in October. But then in May is when they do, like, the actual Renaissance Fair. And I'm just like, it is May in Oklahoma. Who wants soup?
Yeah.
No one. Who wants, like, giant, just, like, container of hot mashed potatoes and meat? I'm like, yeah, that sounds delicious. That also sounds, like, way too heavy and way too hot for 110 degrees.
Like, I really wanted a scotch egg, man. Oh, but it was like, nah. Eggs. But yeah, so it was like, the worst part about it was that it was like in the low 70s, in the 60s, all leading up to this one day that we're fucking there. And it's like, actually, it's going to be 80 degrees when you're here.
That's,
and
I'm how like, it always fucking is.
Why
though?
Do you hate me? Yeah. Why do you hate me?
What did I ever do to you?
I got hit on by another carny. So that was a great time.
This is the way of the Renaissance Fair.
Well, so the first time I was hit on by a carny, it wasn't even at the Renaissance Fair. It was just a guy I had previously seen at the Renaissance Fair. And he asked if I was interested in doing cocaine with him in his hotel room. You know, so that's that time. Or maybe he asked if he could do cocaine off of me. I can't remember. I wasn't really listening. I only heard about it secondhand through AJ because he was trying to talk to me while I was talking to this fire breather woman at this burlesque show, and I apparently didn't even realize this guy was talking to me.
AJ was like,
did you not hear what that man said to you? And I was like, absolutely not. Wasn't even listening. I thought you guys were talking to him. And he was like, well, we were trying to. All he was interested in doing was asking if you wanted to do coke with him and go up to his hotel room with him. And I was like, oh.
And you're like, no, so I was just hitting on this hot fire breather lady.
And so then this time I tagged the guy that we saw performing on Instagram. And he just, like, offered some information that really wasn't necessary. And he kept, like, so throughout his show, he kept saying, like, making jokes about how his DMs were open, right? And so I jokingly went on to look at his Instagram. And sure enough, it says, like, has the little rainbow flag, says ally and Polly and all this other stuff. And I'm like, that, you know, traveling carny man checks out that you would be Polly. Like, that's probably just the best for you doing what you do. But it was just really funny. It was like, I don't think he was kidding. I think he really was trying to get the, you know, the slew of middle-aged women who were screaming at him to DM him. Like, good for you, guy. Hope it works out for
you. Maybe it'll work out for him. If you listen, guy, let us know. Did it work out for you?
I'm not naming names, but for real, if you really want to know, you could go to my Instagram and find out. What did you do for Halloween, though?
We have a little family tradition that my mom started that every Halloween we have chili. So we made a big, big ass pot of chili. And then we popped some popcorn and I watched Scream for the first time.
Yeah, I'm still not over the fact that that was your first time watching Scream. She sent me this text that's like, I just watched Scream for the first time. And I was like, excuse me?
I think you just
say that again?
I think you just responded with a coffin emoji first. And then and then you were like, the first Scream? I was like, yeah, the first one. And
see, I still haven't seen the latest one, but
I've only seen the one.
I was just like, you mean that movie that's been out for decades?
Yeah. I mean, like I told you.
And as a part of our cultural zeitgeist as millennials, I think.
Yeah, like I told you, I knew, like, obviously I knew what happened. I knew the twist. I knew all that stuff. But I hadn't actually, like, sat down and watched it. And I was just like, oh, it's on HBO. Like, might as well go and give it a watch, you know? Like, Halloween, spooky time. I know enough about it that I'm not going to be scared by it, you know? Like, actually scared by it. So, yeah, decided to give it a shot. And man, Drew Barrymore really acted the shit out of that opening scene. She is really good at it.
You really think so? Wow, I really appreciate it.
and I mean, like, really all of the actors, especially, like, I mean, I know that they weren't, like, actually teenagers. But I know for a lot of them that this was kind of one of their first or earlier, like, mainstream hits. Mm-hmm. And, like, man, they did such a good job with, like, acting so fucking unhinged. Like, that's gotta be, like, one of the hardest things to do. To like just
fucking idiots.
Like, to just act so fucking crazy and make it believable.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, he was just unsettling to watch. He just really embodied the character.
Yeah. He's a, I really like, God, I can't think of how to say his name.
Matthew Lillard, I think.
Lillard.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. I think he's.
He seems pretty, like a great guy.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him, but he seems nice.
Everything that I've seen has been really nice. Like he spends a lot of time with his fans, and he. I've seen a few videos and stuff where he like pulls disabled fans or like fans with little kids and stuff that are kind of struggling waiting in line for his photograph and stuff. He'll pull them out to the front to let them be done. Like, cause he's like, you know, I'm gonna get to you guys anyway. There's a set number of tickets or whatever. So like, let me just take care of these guys first where they can go and sit down and they don't have to stand in line with like a little squirming baby or whatever. And and he just goes and does it. And he plays a shit ton of D&D. He just like,
yeah, there's a new thing on, I think, Amazon where they're doing D&D, and he's in that.
Yeah, I think so. He's even got like a whiskey brand or something that he makes that's like D&D themed. Yeah. And I think it's really funny. There's that because, you know, algorithms, how they are. So as soon as I like watched Scream and talked about Scream with one person, I just got a bunch of like Scream on my TikTok and like Matthew Lillard and all the different actors and stuff. And I thought it was really funny. There was some Comic-Con that they did a panel, and they were talking about how the actor who plays Billy Loomis never apologized to him for hitting him with the phone at the end.
Oh.
Because I guess he was supposed to miss him, and it just hit him square in the back with the whole phone. He's like, he never apologized to me for that. But
Watch Scream, everybody.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a little list of other movies. I'm gonna try to go through HBO and see what should be on my list. I know The Lost Boys is gonna be on it. Probably a couple of the other like original Scream movies. Like 2, 3, 4. Probably. I don't know if I'll watch 5 and on or whatever. But anyway, welcome to The Strange and Unusual, where we discuss The Strange and Unusual and talk a lot about Halloween. This is episode 171 of our series, Seeking Out the Weird, the Unexplained, and the Devious from Around the World. I'm Roya.
And I'm Casey.
And this week we're going to do something a little different. I'm going to be talking about a myth. A myth with a fun little queer twist.
This bitch loves a twist.
You do. I'm like M. Night Shyamalan.
I don't know if that's a flex.
I'm like M. Night Shyamalan when he had only ever done Sixth Sense.
I don't know about this.
Sixth Sense. Is
good. I don't know if I'm going to give you that much credit either.
Oh, damn.
Sixth Sense was good though.
Sixth Sense was really good. I also liked The Village, even though I know that's a hot take.
It's been a while since I've seen that, so I don't really remember much about it.
Yeah, I just, the twist in that one caught me, and I guess it didn't catch a lot of other people, and I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little naive.
Okay.
But you can find us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, X, Threads, and on Patreon at patreon.com/strangeunusual. You can find all that in more detail at the end of the episode, as well as in the show notes. If you would like to come and join us on any of those, we would really appreciate it and like to see you.
Yeah, and speaking of, right now we have a poll up until the end of the week for Roya's November poll options. So if you are going to join, this is the time to do it.
And it's a food podcast, so they're all centered around food.
All right.
I mean, kinda. And food adjacent. Food is involved.
I didn't try to read into your weird cryptic answers. Good. So.
Well, you should know that Charles Entertainment Cheese, I'm not going to be talking about the animatronics, so you don't have to be nervous about it.
Thank you. Appreciate.
Yeah. I figured that was, I was like, I should warn her that I'm not talking about, like, the history of animatronics or something.
At the Ren Fair, there was a dude walking around in a fursuit, right?
Uh-huh.
And you know how I get.
Yeah.
And so the entire time, my crew looking out for me, they would be like, don't turn around. And I was like, okay. And I was smart enough to not be the person that immediately goes, what? Like, turn the other way.
Yeah, I trust these people telling me not to do the thing, to not do the thing.
So I didn't look, I saw the back end of a purple fursuit, and I was like, it is 80 fucking degrees, my man. Like, they have, what were you thinking?
They have all sorts of stuff in them to cool them now. Like, all sorts of fans.
I don't
and
care.
Ice packs.
I just don't look at me with your creepy animal eyes. They're like, we were talking about, there are like two exceptions to me in this fursuit rule. It's Gritty and Grimace.
I mean, those two, like, I feel like if in a lineage of fursuits / mascots, I feel like those two are related to one another. They definitely have a similar shape overall.
They do. Yep. Gritty is just a dude trying to make it in Philadelphia, right? So I don't mind him. I know exactly who he is. He's my friend Gritty, just trying to make it day by day. And Grimace, he just wants people to enjoy his little shake.
Yeah, he's just a little guy.
He's just a little guy. He's like, it's my birthday, and everybody made fun of him, and I feel really sad for him. Poor fella.
I didn't end up getting that shake to try. I'm really sad about it.
I am too.
I heard it tasted different if you ate it with french fries versus not eating it.
Fascinating. Well,
we'll never know.
Tell me about this myth.
Okay.
And I'll tell you maybe next week about the myth of Grimace.
The family lineage of Grimace and Gritty and how they're related. Develop a family tree.
Yeah.
Okay, so Weewoos. I mean, we're talking about an ancient myth, so your standard ancient myth stuff. Death, violence, that sort of stuff just kind of comes with the territory. So, like I said, this is going to be a sort of a different episode for us, where we're going to explore an actual myth instead of sort of the overarching pantheon or type of god, like we used to do in, you know, years gone by every once in a while.
Yeah, it is our anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
Here soon.
Yeah, it is. I saw a Facebook post, like, memories of, hey, guys, I'm going to start a podcast with Casey. Help me name it. What should we name it? And I was like, oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah, it's kind of cute.
Okay, so this particular story stood out to me because there's a character in it that I think some of our audience might like to know about, kind of see themselves in it a little bit, maybe. So our story takes place in ancient Mesopotamia, an area mainly consisting of a portion of modern-day Iraq, as well as some of Turkey and Syria as well. The land's name means two rivers, because it was situated between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, which, throwback to my potato episode, means that it was right smack in the middle of the Fertile Crescent. Lots of things are attributed to coming into existence here. The wheel was invented in Mesopotamia. Cursive writing, mathematics, and astronomy all have their roots in Mesopotamia. So the next time someone tells you that nothing good ever came from the Middle East, you have that in your back pocket. Not that I've ever had someone say that to me, but, you know.
Just... Who the fuck is saying that?
I've had people, oh, just carpet.
Have they never had hummus? Yeah. Like, come on.
Just carpet bomb it. There's nothing that's come from there that anybody needs. I'm like,
yep.
My family? Like, what? I know I'm white passing, but damn, that's pretty callous.
Shit.
So we've talked about Mesopotamia quite a few times. The area was happening for a long time. They're just the empire, the rule, the leadership, the existence of Mesopotamia is one of the longest in history. So and this was in a time where whoever controlled the water won. So it's easy to understand why people settled here. It was fertile. crops grew here and had access to two of the three most major rivers in the area at the time. You know, the Nile kind of right next door as far as giant rivers goes.
Yeah.
And so along with sharing beliefs, along with people come sharing beliefs, stories, and ideas, which often at the time meant new religions would be developed. And some of the most influential gods of the earliest recorded human history were from Sumeria, including Inanna. So if you've listened to our Love God episode, or been in a New Age store recently, you're probably aware of her. But we tend to call her by her Babylonian name, Ishtar.
Yep.
She was the goddess of love, war, fertility, beauty, sex, divine law, and associated with political power. I also think it's of note that she was associated with love, beauty, fertility, and sex, but never was associated with being a mother or a mother goddess, despite having two kids, at least.
Good for her.
She was all about the production of babies, not about the carrying or birthing them, which, respect.
And I just, the thing I remember Ishtar is, wasn't Gilgamesh like, nah, thanks?
Yeah. She's also one that, like, rides on the back of a tiger or something.
Shit, like, yeah.
Yeah, she's really freaking cool. And so now, like, many times in history, beautiful people attract beautiful people. And that certainly was the case for our girl Inanna. She was kind of the original catch. She was rich, powerful, influential, and beautiful. She also came as the daughter of the patriarch and matriarch of the entire pantheon, with her father, Sin, the goddess of the moon, and her mother, Ningal, the mother goddess. Like, just sort of that was her deal, was just sort of being the mother of the main pantheon. So Inanna acquired the attention of Dumuzi, who is the god of shepherds and agriculture. Another hugely important god to the people, right? Like, without shepherds and agriculture, they're not surviving very long. Their affection was well received by their peers. Well, all kind of except for Eriskigal, which is Inanna's sister. Eriskigal was also an important and beautiful goddess, and she found herself envious of her sister's love.
We got some sibling rivalry going on.
Yeah, both in choice of partner and being loved by the people. See, Eriskigal was the goddess of the night and the dead. So she basically operated Sumerian/Babylonian underworld, known sometimes as the Great Below versus the Great Above. Like, heaven being the Great Above, she was the Great Below.
Okay.
And so Eriskigal did fall in love, though, and she did get married, but her husband was slain by Gilgamesh. I have it in a second. Yeah. Eriskigal's first husband was the bull of heaven, Golana, who was slain by Gilgamesh. So I have some excerpts of the actual poem that the descent of Inanna, just to kind of give some context of parts of it that I thought were, like, particularly interesting or, like, well written. And the poem Out the Mist starts approximately, and I do say approximately because I found at least 5 translations of this poem. So all of this is from the same translation, but just keep in mind, if you look this up yourself, that there is some differences in interpretation because Sumerian existed so many thousands of years ago. So the translations are a little open-ended. So it follows: from the great above, she opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, the goddess opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, Inanna opened her ear to the great below. My lady abandoned heaven and earth to descend to the underworld. Inanna abandoned heaven and earth to descend to the underworld. So Inanna learned of the death of her brother-in-law and knew that she needed to make the trip to the great below to pay her respects and also to visit her sister. So, like I said, Eriskigal's first husband was known as the Bull of Heaven, Golana, who was slain by Gilgamesh. So Inanna, dressed in her finery, went to the great below with her servant and friend, Ninshubur. What Inanna wore would be important later, so she gathered her crown, a set of lapis beads, a double beaded necklace, a fine robe, a breastplate, a gold ring, and a lapis measuring tape. And on their descent, Inanna warned Ninshubur that should her elder sister get up to something, that she was given, basically gave her servant a particular set of things to do if a, if time passed and Inanna had not returned. So, like, if I don't come back in 3 days, this is what you do.
Okay.
And the poem reads, if I do not return, set up a lament for me by the ruin. Beat the drum for me in assembly places. Circle the houses of the gods. Tear at your eyes, at your mouth, at your thighs. Dress yourself in a single garment like a beggar.
Okay.
She also told Ninshubur to start the lament with Enlil, the god of the wind. And then if he didn't help, she was to move to Nanna, another name for her father, the god of the moon. And if he would not help, she was to go to Enki, the god of wisdom. So basically, there's a whole big thing of, like, what the prayer, you know, don't let your daughter go to the underworld, don't let her be put to death in the underworld, you know, all these different things, reminding these gods of who was going, who they were going to lose if they sent no one after her. Don't let your bright silver be covered in dust in the underworld. Don't let your precious lapis be broken into stone. Don't let your fragrant boxwood be cut into wood for a woodworker. Do not let the priestess of heaven be put to death in the underworld. So Ninshubur was to say the same lament to each of the father gods, and Inanna included of Enki, that Father Enki, the god of wisdom, knows the food of life. He knows the water of life. He knows the secret of life. Surely he will not let me die.
Hmm.
So those three, Enlil, Sin, Inanna, and Enki, were the triad gods associated with the Mesopotamians. For a different example, it would be like Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades in Greek, or Odin, Freyr, and Thor in Norse. You know, like, every kind of pantheon sort of has those three main gods that sort of, like, hold positions of authority over the entire pantheon or different aspects of the pantheon. So that's what Enlil, Sin, and Enki were.
Okay.
So they're the three that most stories wouldn't have happened without. You know, leaders of the pantheon, fathers of the most important children, et cetera, et cetera. Finding the best heroes, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So on finally arriving at the gates of the underworld, Inanna tells Ninshubur to return to Earth and wait for her there. Inanna knocks on the first gate of the underworld, where she was met by the gatekeeper, Neti, who demanded to know who she was. Inanna explained that she was there and why she... Inanna explained who she was and why she was there, that she was there to bear witness to the funeral rites of her brother-in-law. Now, Neti knew better than to just let her in, no matter how powerful or influential she was. After all, the Great Below was not her domain. She had little power or influence there. So Neti was basically like, okay, hold on, let me go talk to my boss. So she returns to Ereshkigal and told her what was going on, who was at the door, and how she was dressed. Now, Ereshkigal was thrilled to have her younger sister visit, but she needed to humiliate her a little bit first. You know, like you do. So she told Neti to bolt each of the gates of the underworld, and to only let Inanna move forward through them if she provided them with an item she was wearing to the gate. 7 gates, 7 pieces of finery. Seems like a fair trade. So it moved forward. At each gate, she was commanded by the gatekeeper to give over one of the 7 items that she was wearing, leaving her with only her robe at the 7th gate. When she passed through the final gate, naked, into her sister's throne room, she saw Ereshkigal rise from her throne and summon the Anunna, which are the judges of the undead.
Mm-hmm.
So Ereshkigal then fixed upon her the eye of death, spoke words of wrath, uttered a cry, and struck Inanna, turning her into a rotting corpse. The corpse of Inanna was then lifted and hung on a hook on the wall.
Oh.
You know, because that's what you want to look at, maybe.
Yeah.
So,
love that.
Yeah. After 3 days, Ninshubur did as she was told and went to the father god's temples, crying for them, tearing at her face until the skin ripped open, ripping at her clothes until they were tattered rags and completely ruined. And Enlil would not help, Nanna would not help, but Enki was deeply saddened by the loss of Inanna and decided to reach out and try to help. Ereshkigal had complicated things for them, though, because she banned any man or woman from coming to the Great Below. Enki, though, was the god of wisdom. And like all wise people, he found a loophole.
Of course.
So from the dirt under his nails, he brought forth a being. A being that was neither male nor female, who had become known as Ashushanamir. And they were a representation of neither and both at the same time. They were a blend of a man and a woman, as well as the absence of a man or a woman. A being that was non-binary. The first actually known recorded representation of a non-binary person.
Slay.
So they were sent to the underworld to recover Inanna with the food and water of life from Enki to return Inanna back to her true form. They slipped through the cracks and open doors of the underworld, undetected, because they were neither male nor female. There were no expectations that someone like them would be given life. They were given instructions that Arishkigal would be in severe pain when they arrived, and she would be complaining of it, and that they were to commiserate with her, to understand her pain as if it were their own, which they did. She didn't know why they were agreeing with her, that she must be in pain, but she appreciated the kindness and offered them a gift in return. She offered them the river, but they refused. She offered them fields that were ready to be harvested, but they refused. She asked them what they wanted then, as she was insisting on giving them a gift for their kindness, and they pointed at the rotting corpse on a hook on the wall. She obliged, as they had earned her trust, only to be betrayed by them. They sprinkled the water...
Betrayal!
They sprinkled the water and the food onto the corpse, and Inanna returned to life. Arishkigal was enraged, as the being she thought was her ally had betrayed her, and cursed Ashushanamir to never be trusted by people again, and anyone that was ever like them to never be trusted by anyone again.
Aww.
However, the judges of the dead were also quick to move in and restrain Inanna from being able to ascend. After all, no one got to just leave the underworld once you were there.
Right.
Someone would have to take her place. She was allowed to leave, basically under the promise that someone would be found to take her place. And she was surrounded by demons known as Gala. And they were there to ensure someone was returning with them to replace Inanna, or they were to bring her back. And I thought that the passage about them was particularly cool. Just interesting description without describing them at the same time. So the quote is, "As Inanna descended from the underworld, the Gala, the demons of the underworld, clung to her side. The Gala were demons who know no food, know no drink, who eat no offering, who drink no libation, who accept no gifts. They enjoy no lovemaking. They have no sweet children to kiss. They tear the wife from the husband's arms. They tear the children from the father's knees. They steal the bride from her marriage home. The demons clung to Inanna." So the goddess of the demons and the Enbi exited the gates of the underworld, which sounds like a weird joke.
It does.
But they were first greeted by Ninshaber, who was the servant, and she immediately falls on her knees, begging Inanna to let her take her place. But Inanna refuses. It's clear to Inanna that Ninshaber was her true friend, her clothing still in tatters, her face and body torn from her scratches, and she had done what Inanna had asked. She had gone to the Father Gods and got their help.
Right.
So this was a woman who was clearly mourning the loss of Inanna. So on their way back to the heavens, they went to the temple of Inanna's first son, who also offered, throwing himself on the ground, begging for her to let him take her spot, but she refused. He was also dressed poorly and mourning the death of his mother. They then went to the temple of her second son. It was the same thing. He was dressed in sackcloth and threw himself at the ground, crying, begging, "Let me help you." And she refused. Then they came upon Dumuzi, Inanna's husband. He sat upon his throne, surrounded by his carafes of milk, wearing all his finery, and he did not even rise to greet her. Quote from the poem.
What?
Inanna fastened on Dumuzi the eye of death. She spoke against him the words of wrath. She uttered against him the cry of guilt. "Take him away. Take Dumuzi away." The Gala seized him by the thighs, poured his milk out, broke his reed whistle, and started to strike him with axes. And he called out to Utu, the god of justice, who was also Inanna's brother, so his brother-in-law, and he begged Utu to turn him into a snake so that he could escape, and Utu did so. Dumuzi escaped his demons. They could not hold him. Eventually, he is caught, though, and it's negotiated that he would spend half of the year in the underworld, and his sister, Geshtinanna, would spend the other half, which kind of reminds me of another myth that, you know, comes from the Greeks a little bit later about how they explain summer and winter, but, you know. But so as a result of the effort Ashushinamir did to save Inanna, and feeling guilty about the curse that Erishkigal put on them, Inanna gave them the gift of prophecy, healing, and wisdom, and said that anyone who was born like Ashushinamir would be sacred in her temple forevermore, and would also hold and carry those same gifts.
Okay.
But yeah, I read about that, and I was like, Ishtar fuck.
Ishtar does fuck.
What a girl boss.
Kind of like her thing.
Yeah. But like, what a girl boss. Just showing up, seeing her husband just sitting there looking fancy, not mourning her, and being like, him, take him, fuck him, I don't care.
Yep.
Get the fuck out. Good for her. Ishtar, the original good for her.
That's right. Oh, man.
But yeah, I, you know, we spent time talking about different cultures and, like, you know, two spirits and different orientations or different gender non-conforming people around the world and things like that, that it felt kind of natural for us to cover on the podcast, like, the first recorded non-binary person.
Yeah, what's interesting to me about, like, having those conversations is the number of times I have to tell people, like, this is a thing that existed well before we decided that there's only two.
Yeah.
Like, this, if there weren't other cultures and other countries and, like, stories going way, way, way further back, like, then I would be like, okay, maybe you have some kind of ground to stand on. But people have been talking about this for literal centuries. And, like, it's millennia. Not... our gender is a construct, period.
Yeah.
Like, I have never had an issue with, like, questioning that in myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt very on the feminine side of things. And it could just be, you know, I grew up in a situation where I was, like, really, I was just talking about this today. Like, I was surrounded by shows like The Golden Girls and Designing Women. And I watched, I was into the Spice Girls. Like, a lot of the things that I watched as a kid really, really passed the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
I was talking about, I want to get a Carrie Fisher tattoo. Because, like, Princess Leia was, like, the first woman that I saw going, you can be a badass and still get the guy and still be a badass.
Yeah.
Like, those are two things that can happen hand in hand. You don't need to immediately just become some docile little thing because now there's a man to take care of you.
Yeah, because it was, a good example with Princess Leia, too, was, like, her living in that reality where even though she had a man to take care of her right now, she'd literally seen her whole planet get vaporized. Like, that can be taken away from you just as easily as it can be given, you know?
Yep.
And that realization that she is the only person who can take care of her.
Yep.
I'm like, yeah, hell yeah.
Get it, girl. But yeah, so, like, I realized that there were a lot of, like, female and, like, women influences in my life that made me feel really comfortable early on with who I was.
Yeah.
And I never really questioned anything, but I wish that there were, like, it's such a shame that we live in a world where there's not that for everyone.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, when I look back at things that I enjoyed, because I also liked the Spice Girls, and I liked, you know, I didn't grow up around the Golden Girls. Surprisingly, it seems like something my mom would have liked, but I don't remember it. But those types of shows and stuff, and I remember, like, looking back at it now, I always leaned to the, like, tomboy character.
Mm-hmm.
I never...
Sporty Spice was my bitch.
Yeah, I was Sporty Spice. Like, I was, what was it, Reggie on
Rocket Power.
On Rocket Power.
Yep.
I was, you know, Lil or Susie on Rugrats. You know, I was, like, just always...
Eliza Thornberry was my shit.
Yeah, I loved Eliza. But I liked Debbie, too, on that show. You know? And it's just... I've always had that, which I think kind of led me down a, like, am I non-beanie? Maybe? Not sure. But I don't think that it's,
yeah.
It's not something that I, for myself, am particularly concerned about.
Yeah, I think that's, I think that maybe is more how I mean to say it. It's like, I'm just like, yeah, this is what I am, and like, I don't feel compelled either way to question.
Yeah.
Which could be good and could be bad.
Like, yeah, it's just,
I'm just like, I've accepted the binary for myself.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me, which I guess in and of itself is probably leads me into non-binary territory.
Yeah.
Of just like, it literally, you could ma'am, sir,
any pronouns,
he, she, they, whatever, that's fine, I don't care, you know? Like, for me, obviously, if it matters to the person, I care, but but for me, myself, it doesn't matter to me. I don't put stock into it.
Right.
And like, yeah, and so I was just, but thinking about it and just seeing how, especially, you know, the kind of timely conversations about gender and orientation and preference and all those different things of, you know, like, literally, we've been here forever.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as people knew how to fuck, they were fucking everyone.
They'd be fucking.
Like, it didn't matter.
You get fucked, and you get fucked.
And, like, yeah.
We hate Oprah, by the way.
But it just...
I use that meme, but fuck you, Oprah.
But it just, you know, we've always been here. So, like, maybe by arming people with more conversation, more talking points, mm-hmm. of things that are even older than indigenous tribes in North America and those stories that have survived to now with them, you know, if you're not going to listen to the people who are living their reality of it right now, then maybe you'll listen to someone who existed in 550 BC Mesopotamia, Samaria, you know?
Probably not.
Probably though. Not though, but you know, it's at least information. Maybe it'll give somebody a little modicum of peace knowing that this has been around.
There's validation out there. Yeah.
This has been around. And Ashushin Amir was a badass. And there's some beliefs that Arishkigal and Ashushin Amir banged. Like,
damn.
and that's why Arishkigal took it so personally that Ashushin Amir was just like, no, I'm gonna like reincarnate your sister. Bye.
Checks out. Well, thanks for joining us today for our discussion on the descent of Inanna and Ashushin Amir. And now we want to hear from you. So send us your stories, your questions, and your feedback to strangeunusualpodcast@gmail.com. If you are sending a listener story, we just ask that you put listener story in the subject line so that we can sort through those a little more easily. Do you have any interesting stories that you'd like us to tell from, you know, Sumerian folklore? Do you have a non-binary or... you know, multi-gender situation story that you want us to talk about?
A queer folk hero or queer myth?
Yeah, another myth or legend or just cultural, you know, thing you want us to talk about? Let us know.
You can also find us on Instagram and Threads at strange_unusual_podcast or our personal accounts, Roy Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can also find us on X at _strangeunusual, at Calamity Casey, and at Roy Rampage. We're also on Facebook. Just search for the Strange and Unusual podcast and look for our logo. I am also streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/RoyRampage and Kick at something similar, but I don't remember what it's.
Helpful.
It's probably just like kick.tv/RoyRampage. It's Roy Rampage there. But if you'd like we said at the top of the episode, you can join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/strangeunusual. Like Casey said, we have a poll going on for the rest of this week, so if you jump on it really quick, you can get on that by the time this episode is out. But we have access to future polls, we have access to our Patreon-only Discord, we have different conversations, we share memes, we talk about cases, and we have some older and one newer bonus episodes that are on Patreon that will not be on the free feed. So if you're interested in those are available on our Patreon as well for just $2 a month. But we
That's right.
understand right now, shit's expensive. Casey and I talked for like 30 minutes before we even started the podcast about how crazy expensive shit is right now. So if you are unable to support us financially, we totally understand it. But if you are unable to, we just ask that you like, share, subscribe, rate, review, share us with your ancient Mesopotamian ghost that haunts you, like, you know, whoever, whatever. But it just helps us get out there to more people and helps grow our community of listenership, and we would really appreciate it.
We would. Thanks, guys. Now go out and sow chaos.
Yeah. Be gay, do crime.
Bye.
Bye.